On this week's show, we look back at all the weekend's Pro 14 action, which is basically just Leinster winning again.
Fla falls in love with Eddie O'Sullivan, having known him for 15 years and denied that he's dead on. Eventually, he discovers he's signed.
Trimby reveals a deep, dark secret of a salacious rumour he started about Mick O'Driscoll back in Irish camp.
And we pick our underrated 15s.
Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. Bit of an odd weekend, Trimby. The Guinness Pro 14 was back for just one round of games before we launched back into the Champions Cup next weekend. And it was 3 out of 4 wins for the Irish provinces. Munster, the only blipping moment on Friday night against Edinburgh down in Cork. But despite that, the 4 Irish provinces still hold the top spots in Group A and B, which is brilliant for Irish rugby, considering how bad the World Cup was. But we won't mention that. Don't mention the World Cup.
Don't mention it again.
Don't. No, let's forget about it. You were doing co-coms. I heard you.
Yeah?
Very good. Yeah.
Oh, you can hear me on Airsport. Is that the way it works?
I was in England.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
I was listening over there.
Okay.
And you're bringing your voice up and down and stuff like that. And,
oh.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
A bit of animation.
Really? Very dramatic.
Yeah, it's good.
Sean Holly's very good. Robbo was in good form.
Mm. Sean Holly's a lovely fella. I met him in Swansea last week.
Great fella. Yeah. He was being a bit coy because he was asked quite a lot. I think he's fed up with talking about Ospreys losing Alan Clark.
Mm.
Not completely official yet, but he's still technically employed by Ospreys, but not in control of the first team for the game of the weekend, and then they get hammered by or beat by Cheetahs again. But anyway, Sean Holly's fed up talking about it because everybody keeps saying, well, any chance of you getting the gig, they reckon?
All right.
Well, that's what they're saying. He was kind of like not ruling it out, but I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, but anyway, that's the chat. Sean Holly's fed up, I think, just fielding questions about it. But lovely guy. Robbo was in good form. Typical. He made some quip about... because it was Black Friday, he called your man Price Half Price. What was it? What was his name again?
Full Price.
Full Price Half Price.
Half Price. Full Price is his name. I didn't think of that.
Wow. Yeah. So Robbo was in good form.
He talked about was it Harnordicky or someone or Yeshvili killing a pigeon with a box kick.
Oh yeah.
Were you listening to that?
Yeah. No, rings a bell.
Not really.
No, I heard. Yeah. With us?
Yeah.
Oh, that rings a bell. I was daydreaming quite a bit.
There you go.
During the game, yeah.
I think it was that game anyway.
There was at one stage he went, Andrew, like, stab me out of a daydream.
And you're like, you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew. Yeah.
I honestly think though, I felt more comfortable in the role as co-coms, because in the past it took me a while to get up to speed with it, but I felt more comfortable on Friday there because genuinely I wasn't thinking too much.
Mm.
If you overthink it, then you end up like trying to be too articulate, trying to be, you know, a wee bit fake.
Mm.
And then sometimes there's been the past where I've been like, think, and, you know, the worst thing for any kind of creativity is to go, think of something creative now.
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah. 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 So, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed just daydreaming a little bit more, because in the past I always thought as co-coms, you should just be watching the game and having a conversation.
Mm.
That's what Nick Mullen said to me after the BT game a week before. Let's just have a conversation. I was like, that really stuck with me. I think that's quite a nice piece of advice. So don't overthink. Just try and pick up on things or try and observe. But genuinely,
you're right. It was a good match to commentate on as well. I really enjoyed it.
It was. The second half dried up quite a bit.
It did.
But yeah, early on it was great.
Yeah.
A few big performances from Ulster.
Cool.
We'll get into that when Flag gets on.
Yeah.
But my kids went to visit Santa on Friday night and I missed that because I was at the game.
Oh, no.
But Santa was Anna's dad, their granddad, obviously.
In the shopping centre?
Yeah. Or? Yeah.
Why?
So there was a wee community thing put on and he was asked to be Santa. And Jack walked up with Molly and Jack got like anywhere near him apparently and just went, that's granda.
Called him straight away.
He's 4 years old and he knows there's no such thing as Santa.
Oh, does he?
No.
Hey, we've got
to... No, there's going to be...
We'll bleep that out.
Or just put in a, is such thing as Santa.
Was it a terrible Santa? If it was like, I just imagine...
Apparently not.
Hanging down and...
Apparently not. It was, Anna's mum was telling me the story. She said, genuinely, it was a decent outfit. Like, it was a decent attempt. The thing that might have given it away was he's French. He's been living in Belfast for like 35 years or something, and he still speaks with a really thick French accent. Right. And I think he had to do the countdown from 10 to switch on the lights as well. But that was a bit of a giveaway.
I mean, absolutely.
Yeah, but I think it was before that. He Jack just went, that's grander there.
My dad is Santa in Limerick in the Dunn Stores, new, incredible Dunn Stores at the Jetland Centre in Cardavon or something.
Did Mick the baby call it?
Mick the baby hasn't been brought yet. We're bringing him next week. My dad did send our family a WhatsApp group a message this morning, a picture of him in bed with my mother dressed as Santa going... Santa delivered an early Christmas present to Terry this morning, which was quite disturbing. My sister's like, I'm going to counselling tomorrow. But yeah, I can't wait to bring the kids to him or to anyone out there. Go to see Mick the Santa.
Yeah.
In the
Mick the Granda Santa.
Mick the Granda Santa.
And then Rory got his final farewell at the Millennium Stadium. High-fived everyone on the team on his way off.
He did.
You didn't see, there was something put up on Instagram. There were three of the Kiwis that were in the team did a haka, like as a tribute to him or whatever it was.
Where?
In the changing room. I assume it was after the game. Might have been before, actually. He was in his polo, but Rory's just standing there awkwardly. He's like, I'll just wait till you're done, fellas. And they finished up. He's like, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Wow.
We get on with it here.
Yeah. What a way to finish, though, going on a little tour with them.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, look very nice.
Kicking goals, you name it.
Yeah. Given out to by Nigel Owens, which I loved. I was in England for the weekend. We had a gig in London on Friday night, a gig in Liverpool on Saturday. And people have started shouting your name at me during gigs, like, where's Andrew Barry? Like a song request or something. And I'm like, I don't know where he is.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, that is weird.
It is.
Where's Andrew?
Where's Andrew Barry? Like, well, now that you mention it, like your guest appearance, dance across the stage.
Well, I'm still waiting for my opportunity to make a guest appearance.
Yeah, we might we'll get you out in Belfast in a few weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm keen. I need to get a bit of work done. I need to practice.
Get the drum machine out.
Yeah. When you were in the UK at the weekend, did you get the chance to taste any Cadbury's chocolate? This has been brought to my attention recently, and I've just tested it this morning. I got a whole nut on the way here from the train station. Mexican, someone said to me, Mexican chocolate, Mexican Cadbury's is nowhere near the same as Northern Irish Cadbury's. And they're right, it tastes like dog turd.
Mexican.
Yeah, down south, that's what we call yous. Oh. Because we're obviously USA.
Yeah. I'll happily be Mexican if you can be USA all you want, man.
Yeah. So, yeah.
You feel stupid now, actually.
Yeah. No, we've had, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, try it. It's
better. Ours is better.
No, right? It's worse. It's way better up north.
Nah.
It is. Try it. Anyway, we'll not go on about it, but try it.
I will. Bring some next week.
Okay.
All right, well, we get Fla on. We've got a good bit to talk about. We've got Pro 14 action and then the Champions Cup coming up next weekend and some other bits and bobs happening in the world of rugby. So we'll take a quick break and get Jerry on.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Fla, you're very welcome to the show. Did you have a good weekend? You were very busy. You did three or four games with Air Sport?
Three games, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was very good. I did the Munster Edinburgh game on Friday night down in Irish Independent Park with Dunica, Strings and Tommy. And that was different, very different, because when we did the World Cup games, Tommy was really, really serious and really, really sweaty. And then for the Pro 14, then it was like they were just so relaxed and they were just having a laugh, himself and Dunica. And I was like, what's going on here? And they were like, oh, it's just way, way more relaxed for the Pro 14. And then I was doing the Glasgow and Leinster game and the Connacht and Kings game in with Air Sport from the studio on the Saturday night. I was doing that with Eddie
your new Sullivan. BFF.
Well,
you've hit it off.
I hadn't spoken to him really properly. I met him once during the Churchill Cup when he was coaching the coaching the USA. So I was there to the lads going, oh, I'm working with Eddie tomorrow, and I said he's a great laugh. I went up, man, and I had such a laugh with him, man. He was so sound, and I was like, off air then, like I'll be picking his brain, asking about coaching and stuff like that. And he was, it was so weird to be like, you know, it's like, you know, when you were in school and you have a teacher and you see the teacher as one way and you're like, that teacher is just that way all the time. And then when I met him then, I was like, I had a great laugh off him, man.
We spoke last week about the great debate that was going on in Joe.ie last Thursday night, and he was up against Ewan McKenna talking about the Irish rugby team being celebrity losers.
Losers.
I think, was any of that released? Any of the footage I saw, Pat, you were at it, were you?
Yeah, nothing yet. There were tiny little clips on social media, but Eddie O'Sullivan was brilliant.
Was he?
That was the best one of the night now. He was unbelievably, the crowd were loving him as well. Like, and he just, like, Hugh McKenna came out and made a brilliant start. He started talking about how Ireland are like little Timmy O'Toole, who got lost, you know, fell down the well.
Simpsons,
and yeah, and then Homer's like, what a hero. Yeah. And then he's like, well, why is he here? I was like, well, because he fell down a well, like I said. He said, Ireland there like that. So that was a brilliant start from him. But then Eddie had him rattled after that, and he's just speaking over him and shouting over him and talking about fee-paying schools. And Eddie had a big list of, you know, he didn't go to a fee-paying school, he didn't. And he started listing out around 12 or 13 of the squad that didn't go to fee-paying schools. And then he was just saying... Ewan McKenna was like, oh, all these brave losers. And then Eddie's like, yeah, you can be brave. You can be brave and lose. You can be brave and still lose. And everyone's like, yeah. So brilliant. That was great.
Timmy O too.
But he did lose. It was a brave loss. Because I think the fans had to vote for who they thought the winner was going to be. And there was a big gar crowd there in the night. So it was 58% to 42%. But
Eddie won.
Yeah, Eddie lost.
Oh, lost.
Brave.
I thought you said he was going...
Heroic defeat.
I thought it was going to be Eddie for president there. Mm. If Eddie was president, you could be his first husband.
I'd be first lady if he wants me to be. I don't care. I'll wear a dress.
Went that well.
You and Eddie should start a podcast.
Maybe we
should. Flaws, House of Rugby.
We did a little bit of the Jamie thing when he came on first instead of talking. I started going, and then we kind of left it go then because it just gets old. And that's probably, RTÉ will probably sue us if we do it because that's RTÉ's thing. But
you talked to him about that? About the Jamie thing at all, or
briefly, like I didn't know whether it was panto for the show or what. Like I just said, when we get on air now, remember I'm not Jamie, so it's not like we don't have to be banging heads here. If we disagree, we disagree. Yeah. He was like, yeah, no worries. I was impressed, Pat, that I didn't even know that Ewan McKenna could be a real human. Do you know what I mean? And the fact that he pitched up and took Eddie on, I admire that. That was good.
He had a good intro. Yeah, Ewan McKenna came on. He just started throwing bags of Tato at everybody in the crowd, and everyone was like, "Yeah,
just to win over the crowd."
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, Tato.
My God,
he knows us so well. Like, it's like, "Yeah, Tato, all right."
That's hilarious.
But yeah, he was good. He was good.
Okay. Right, we'll start with the Ulster Scarlets match in Kingspan on Friday night. Trimby, you were there, so I'll direct my first question to you. It's probably as good a first half, or at least first 20, 30 minutes that Ulster or any Irish side will put in going forward. Some incredible performances in that first half as well. Treadwell, Cooney, McCluskey had a great Ballacoon.
Gilroy was good too.
He was.
Yeah.
So... out of that first 40, what was most impressive for you?
I've said the last few weeks, Bath away, Claremont at home, Ulster looked like they were grinding out results and they were getting a lot of confidence from that. But they weren't quite cutting loose and their passes just weren't quite sticking. They stuck in the first half and they just wiped the floor with them. 4 tries, easy. Mm. Just a lot of intensity early on, a lot of nice little tip-ons out the backs, find themselves in a lot of space, and then Scarlets just looked like they were... rabbits in the headlights. I thought physically, defensively, and with ball in hand as well, the one-off carries from Ulster were really dynamic, really physical. I thought they were class. They dropped off in the second. It's very difficult at halftime to feel like you've already got your bonus point and it's kind of job done. It's hard to come out. I always find that, even personally, if I felt like I played well in the first half, I was like, I just wish the game was over now, because you can only kind of... you know, you can only ruin a good performance. Whereas, and it looked like Ulster were kind of a little bit the same. They kicked on towards the end, the last 5-10 minutes, they started to dominate again. But yeah, they were really good. Scarlets were missing 9 players for the
Welsh regions don't have a chance with the way it's been set up at the moment. Like,
yeah.
Everyone talks about like how you know, around Gatland, saying like Gatland is so good at galvanising the players and bringing them up. But it's because the Welsh regions are so under-resourced. Like the players, they don't, the fact that they haven't had their players, like Alan Clark hasn't had a chance.
Like, yeah, it's a tough gig. Yeah, like, for him,
so it, obviously the injury profile of the squad was a disaster. But then not getting their best players back.
What was the point of that game on Saturday, the Barbarians match? Really, just to say goodbye to Gatland, but
it's also probably bringing in revenue into the Welsh Rugby Union, but it's doing it. Like it's
at a cost of the,
it's crippling the regions, you know. If I was Brad Moir, the Scarlets coach, I'd be like, you know, what chance do we have? And the fact that Ulster went strong again, like with Cooney, Kutsia, and McCluskey, you know, they're three key guys. I think
I thought that was unusual. I was surprised. I can see the logic actually afterwards, but I thought right, two big games last 2 weeks, and then two big games back to back to Harlequins. I thought probably make a few changes. Ideally, Kutsia, maybe McCluskey, Cooney, those three, as you say, probably get a rest. But McFarland's take on it was, let's keep the momentum going. And someone like Marty Moore as well, thought he might have got a break, but he's only played maybe two or three games, to be fair, but he's so important as well. Mm. Having said that, Tom O'Toole came off the bench. Did you see him?
Yeah.
He looked exceptional. On fire, yeah. But yeah, that I was surprised by that.
But I suppose with like similar with Connacht, like it's so important for them to win these big Pro 14 games. And I mean, they're in the top two. That's so important for Ulster. And the way they managed it, like taking Cooney off after 45 minutes, taking Marty Moore off, you know, resting those players as quickly as they could. I think I just really backed them on doing that thing. Yeah. And the fact, obviously, the outcome that you're looking for is a win, bonus point win, but no injuries. And you could not be in a better position. Because like as we've seen and we talked about the Premiership players, those guys play every single week at the top level. And you know maybe that's what these Irish players need as long as they're looked after during those games.
And it's good to see. So Bill Johnson got a go as well. It's probably his first. He might have started one game before. Anyway, he isn't very inexperienced. He might have played actually for Munster if he hadn't moved up the road. Your man...
Ben Healy
getting a go. Ben Healy had a tough start, didn't he? Did he get a bump? Did he get a knock in the warm up?
Stephen Archer clipped him before the game because we were obviously highlighting, you know, this is a guy who's getting his chance here. And then it just cut to a shot of him, like, you know, they'd pick a player out in the warm and he'd like two tampons stuck up his nose, blood all over his face. And we were like, oh, well. And we kind of like it was just funny that he popped up and he was all fucked up and we were like, oh, and we kind of started laughing and then Dunnigan went, we obviously shouldn't be laughing at this, and we were like, yes, we shouldn't be laughing, and he's going to go in and get a HIA. Yeah. But it was a tough start for him.
And then so that was tricky, obviously getting bashed by Stephen Archer's head in the warm up, and then the tampons and the bloody face, and then the first pass from Nick McCarthy was on his line and right at his bootlaces.
Through his legs.
Like this poor guy doesn't stand a chance. Yeah. He did well, to be fair, in the end, but that's a tough start.
Yeah.
You know, so that was what I was going to say, though. So he got a game. He wouldn't have got anywhere near as much exposure from his experience as Bill Johnson would have got from his, because he had a dominant pack, like a lot of experience around him, guys, Cooney inside him, McCluskey outside him. So he would have got a lot from that, whereas Ben Healy would have just been, it would have been like playing an underage team. You know what I mean? He wouldn't have got the same exposure.
Yeah, we talked about this quite a lot, and I spoke about it with Eddie as well. And Eddie was saying, like on air when we were reflecting on it, he was like, look, he said, I think if Johan van Graan probably had the benefit of hindsight, he would have said, oh, maybe I could have dropped JJ Hanrahan in there, or maybe I could have just one or two, because Munster were so close. Like Edinburgh went full strength against them, and only barely squeezed past Munster by 2 points. So, but the difference is that, like, the fact that Munster have been so strong in the league, you have to back guys. So the majority of those guys would have been involved all the way up to that point. You bring back your internationals for Europe. And then the fact that if Tyler is potentially out, and then you have Joey out, if they went and played Tyler, if they went and played JJ in that game and he got an injury, well then Ben Healy has to play in the two biggest season-defining games in Europe. So they had to play Ben
Healy. Yeah, no, fair enough.
And Nick McCarthy looks like he's going to be stepping into Albie Mathewson's spot now on the bench, so they had to play him. Dan Goggin has been really, really good for Munster all season. Sammy Arnold has to get a chance at some stage.
Yeah, Sammy, he hasn't featured much, and he went really well last year, didn't he? Mm. Or was it? Yeah,
no, it was the year before. Oh, yeah. He got a lot more rugby. But yeah, Sam is an absolute warrior. But so like it was more highlighted by the fact that Edinburgh went with their absolute full strength team, and that's probably. But I thought like it was a really, really shit game of rugby. It was so bad. You know, Munster weren't miles off. You know,
Like you said, they were so close to winning it. They probably needed one or two more experienced players to get them over the line. But looking ahead to Sarries next week, you've got to say it was the right decision to rest as many players as they can.
Yeah, absolutely. Because they're still top. They're still top of the league. Now they've gotten some game time through all those lads, and obviously they would have liked to have won it, but you're going to be bringing in a pretty much completely different team now for the back-to-back Saracens games, and they're going to be season-defining for them. So they're going to come back in fresh and say, "Listen, you do a job for these two games, and we're in pole position now."
Okay, so going into the Saracens game, I watched them against Bath yesterday, and they took them a while to get out of the blocks because they brought the pretty much full-strength team back, I think. And then once they did, after about 30 minutes, they clicked and just put a few phases together, and Elliot Daly scored in the corner, and then it was just like, right, they're back to the best. What do Munster do changing things up from last year in the semi-final? How do they go about business a little bit different to give them a chance?
I don't think you can go and look to the semi-final last year. You look to what happened to them on Saturday night. Mm-hmm. So everyone's talking that Munster are trying to be more expansive, and if you're trying to be more expansive, and if they're putting more of an emphasis on, I suppose, unstructured play. Munster struggled against Edinburgh in the structured kicking game. So like restarts, like they just failed to take restarts. They could not exit out of their own half. Like the first half, Munster just stayed. This is like the strength of Munster.
Like, even though that was very much individual mistakes, like they're definitely going to be different personnel in there from Saturday night to next weekend. Are they comparable? Like.
Well, I think a lot of it is going to be your. I understand that, you know, Conor Murray, there's going to be a big difference between any scrum half in the world looking to exit with a kick versus Conor Murray. But a lot of it are your systems and how you deal with it. Like, and it was like Edinburgh didn't create anything against Munster. Edinburgh just kicked the ball to Munster, and Munster couldn't get out of their own half. Now, you're going to change it up, but Munster are going to get all of that again. And what I'm saying is, the 14 guys that have been that played last Friday night against Edinburgh, they've been there nearly all the time, getting trained by the coaches, you know, working on what their strategies are around handling the kicking game and managing it. So if they put an emphasis more on the attacking side, which is what everyone is sort of saying, is that Munster need to spend a bit more time investing on the attack, well, then something else is going to suffer, and it's the kicking game. And that's where they suffered against Edinburgh. They couldn't handle the Edinburgh kicking game. And that's what they're going to be faced against Saracens. Mm. Now, I understand, like, Munster showed a lot of ambition against Racing, looking to offload. They're offloading, you know, they're offloading less this season than they were last season, but now they haven't had their best players back. So when you get your best players back, hopefully you'll start to see that more. Maybe there's more intent. They definitely look that they're playing with a little less structure in how they're going. It's translating that. Like, looking at Ulster now. Ulster are one of the top offloading teams in the Pro 14. And I think that Munster probably want to get to that, but they're actually quite low on it at the moment.
The tendency is, so the Racing game, we saw the best version of Munster.
Yeah.
Because Racing kind of set the tone. They said, this is the kind of game we're going to see today. Mm. We're going to be thrown out a bite. And it's almost like Munster sort of went, right, well, you know what, we can kind of... you know what?
Well, shucks, guys.
we're here then, why don't we just...
So they kind of threw it about a bit, and then it was like they went, right, well, grand, that's the kind of game it's going to be today. Saracens is going to be totally different. They're going to set a physical, like a bit of an arm wrestle, a bit of a test match mentality tone. Mm. And then I'd be interested to see if Munster can say, right, despite that being the way you're going to play, we're going to still try and play sort of rugby that not necessarily just entertains, but scores tries.
Yeah, my view of Munster over the last few years, I think we don't come out with an intensity at the start of games that is like, we finish games really strong, like we've seen over the last two Champions Cup games.
Yeah, yeah.
Like massive finishes to get over the line. And we kind of grow into a game or don't take many chances in the first half and just try and slow things down maybe. I'm not sure if that's the tactic, but that's my view.
You got to say no, because I can speak definitively on previous seasons, and you're right, we were always slow to start. Munster were always slow to start. I can't speak definitively.
I think from the Ospreys game, it looked like there was a quiet confidence there that we'll get here, but it kind of got to panic stations towards the end, and you feel like if they had...
They're like 82 minutes going...
Yeah.
All the way... Time to score a bonus point.
Like, do you ever watch a soccer match? Like, back definitely 10 years, maybe 15 years ago, especially watching Ireland play, and they'd fuck about for 80 minutes, 85 minutes, and then the last 5 minutes, they'd start pouring forward and launching balls into the box, and they'd, more often than not, they'd score and they'd create chances, and you're like, why don't you do that in the first minute, man? And I think for me, if Munster want to beat Saracens, it's they got to go out and play and catch them on the hop, make it as difficult for Saracens to get a foothold in the game and start, you know, it's hard to score against Saracens, I'm aware of that, like, but start trying to get the scoreboard ticking over with kicks, with drop goals, with any way to start getting scores and trying to get ahead and then stay ahead and frustrate them and make it difficult for them.
Because you can't chase the game against Saracens, I think you have to be ahead.
Yeah. Mm.
Because the typical Saracens model is a couple of penalties. If it ends up being like 9-3, 9-6, then Saracens score. And I always think the game's gone whenever Saracens go with more than one try ahead.
Yeah, well, we used to always have that because we used to play a little bit, a slightly similar model, game plan to Saracens. So when the other team goes ahead against you, there's no scoreboard pressure. You have to play a little bit more when sometimes you don't want to play. But like, I think it's very much... You're going to see what Johan van Gran came out after the Racing game. He said, give us time and we'll see where we're going from here, because we now have a full cohort of our best players back, and I presume that what they want to do, they're going to start doing it from there. Because looking at it statistically, Munster are kicking the ball, I think they kicked the ball almost the second most in the Pro 14. They're one of the lowest offloading teams this season. But I'm sure that there's an intent that they want to move towards. Now we've got our best players, like in the Racing game, I think they might have had 10 offloads in the game. Mm. You know, when they get your best players back in the field, you start to see, well, what way is it going to go from here? I agree with you that Munster have to start strong against Saracens. I think it's going to be difficult. Like, whatever way that the Munster decide that their identity is going to be this season, I think we're starting to see it in Europe, because that is their first choice team, but they need to start with that straight away. They can't be like, I agree with you, they can't be like, oh, we're just stuck in the kicking game now as we used to be, and then go, oh shit, we're actually behind, and then trying to force
it's do or die. If they lose on Saturday, they're pretty much out.
Yeah, it's, if you lose at home, it's obviously tough.
Yeah.
And I think it's, are Saracens, the big question to me is, are Saracens gonna, are they gonna go for it?
Yeah.
Even if they're
successful at home and then they go away and if they don't get a win on the road there, they're still struggling because they've got to go to La Défense.
Yeah.
And try and get yeah. I think Lamour is playing La Défense. They got to go there and then.
Come here, I have a question for you. did you work with, is it Soper?
Sober, Dan Soper?
Yeah, yeah. Did you work with him?
No, I left as he arrived. He was waiting for me to finish, and then he said, "I'll only take that gig."
Because he seems to be really highly rated. And
sounds like it. I know a guy who taught with him when he was. Am I right in saying Dan Soper? He's the one that came from
yeah,
the,
yeah,
his,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So skills coach is his kind of remit, and he's really well thought of amongst the guys.
Like,
a lot of detail, a lot of like small things, like stuff that maybe just gets. Swept to the side is not that important whenever you're looking at kind of macro game plans and set piece and, you know, stuff like just little bits of skill, like the sort of stuff you're talking about when you spent time in New Zealand.
Yeah, but if you look at it, like Ulster or Ryder, like trying to see like what Dan McFarlane's what his vision is for the team to become. Like, I think they're short of being a top like a side to challenge for the European Cup at the moment. They're going really well. They need to get stronger, need to recruit, but you know, they've, if you look at the actual age profile through the squad, it's pretty young, and they're working on their skills. They're one of the, you know, I think they're like almost, they're nearly at 9 offloads per game. It's pretty impressive, yeah, you know.
You can leave out another five or six players out of that team on Friday night and still have a really strong team. Ulster can. Oh, yeah. You know, they could have left out Cooney, Coetzee.
McCluskey and them, yeah.
McCluskey, Treadwell, maybe second rows it could be short. But
they were already missing a lot of guys, though. That looked like it was full strength. Yeah, but
Fadiz, is it the...
Yeah, Matt Fadiz, yeah.
What a game he had, man. What a 13.
I think he's brilliant.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely
he's
brilliant.
He's gone really well. And
just to be clear, man, that's got like... My mum would have made a couple of line breaks against that Scarlett.
That's
team,
what like. I thought, right? Because there's so many youngsters.
You
in
thought
Scarlett
my mum would have made.
That's exact Flannery's mum. I honestly thought Ulster were going to turn up and they would hose them easily. Mm. But I gather from the Ulster side that they were actually reasonably nervous because of the influence of Brad Moore and a few of the youngsters. Like you potentially could have seen Scarlett's playing like they were a few years ago whenever
they just threw
it about everywhere. I think that's kind of what Ulster were nervous about. A few youngsters who could actually, not big names, but be pretty impressive out there. That's what I thought as well, but that's what they were saying anyway.
Well, you can only judge players on what they actually do, and player man for man, they all had really confident, focused games. Like Balakoon hasn't played much rugby at all. He was man of the match, unbelievable.
He's turned around.
And then even in the second half, when Scarlett's obviously got a bollocking at half time, as I think you mentioned in co-coms, came out and they put some phase together. Ulster defended like for their lives, kept them scoreless till 75 minutes, and just looked really comfortable in defence, really good line speed, really good chop tackle.
Smashing guys in defence.
Yeah.
Kneeling guys, like obviously Jared Payne had a good influence there as well. Mm. Like, even just whatever about the defensive shape and making decisions and all, just fronting up, smashing fellas. Mm. I thought they looked really dominant, really up for it.
Yeah.
And you could have been forgiven for it being not a week where you're up for it, with two big performances the last 2 weeks and then two big games coming around the corner as well.
I'll tell you what, Cooney, man, he's leading from the front.
Yeah.
He is, like, he's got to be in line.
He's got to be in the mix, hasn't he?
Yeah, definitely.
So you mentioned Balakoon. Mm. He is a guy who... I think a lot of people just thought he's just rapid quick, really, really quick. And that's what you might have said about him a year ago, maybe. Mm. But he seems to have just... Again, it could be a reflection of being in that environment where you've got Sober, Adden, Jared Payne, Adden, and then Dan McFarren, and then obviously Peely as well. Like, a lot of good influences. He just seems really experienced. He read the game really well. He made Dan Jones... Remember we talked about Andy Farrell talking about telling lies? You know, he just told lies to him and he just tricked him into kicking it where he wanted it. And then he just smashed whoever was there, looked physical, looked dominant. He looked really good, I thought.
Yeah. That's enough. All right, that's enough. We'll move on. Glasgow versus Leinster, you did that one as well. Mm. Leinster equally is, I suppose, not depleted, but it's a second choice team, you'd imagine, starting 15.
What about Rory Jackson's moustache?
Yeah. And mullet.
pink moustache.
Yeah.
And the mullet, yeah, it was crazy.
If someone signs for your team, like an Australian or a Kiwi or something, then they arrive and you're like Bossy shortly after he arrived, grew his dreadlocks.
Yeah.
It was mullet dreadlocks. And you're going, he's obviously a bit eccentric, right? Okay, but that's him. But am I right in saying your man Jackson's been, he's done the rounds a bit, but he was kind of normal.
Yeah.
He wasn't the sort of fella who grows a pink moustache and a mullet. And
then mid-career crisis.
Yeah, it's he's just turned around and said, you know what?
Gonna get himself a pair of fake tits or something. Just a couple of cups up, you know.
Yeah. I find the whole thing odd. Just like he just.
Did you see Reece Marshall on Friday night? No, the Munster hooker, the Kiwi. He looked like He looked like a.
He looked like your man from like home and Away. Toad.
Toadfish.
Toadfish. He had a long mullet. He'd like these chops coming down here, and he was like strolling around. I was like, "What the fuck, Reece, man? Looks mental." But he's a Kiwi man, so that's there. That's the way.
That's what I mean. You get away with it if you're from somewhere else, but if you're like just from Scotland,
yeah.
Going, what happened there?
Almost got a hat trick too. Is good Glasgow side out as well.
Glasgow won nearly full tilt, man.
Yeah, it could have been like 25 points to 3 up after 20 minutes. Peter Horn missing a few kicks and
Matawalu
dropped the ball on the touchline. But saying that, Leinster started a little bit, I don't know, nervous or maybe lack of cohesion between the different partnerships in the field, and they got quite narrow in defence, but after 20-25 minutes they grew into it and just took control.
That is an unbelievably good synopsis. That was exactly it, man. It was exactly as I honestly, when I'm watching a game, I write notes as I'm going along, and that was it. It was like, geez, Glasgow are looking pretty sharp here, and Leinster are kicking the ball a bit loosely to them, and so Glasgow were just going at them from everywhere and got a couple of breaches. They just didn't finish them, you know? And I was like, oh, this looks pretty tough. And then, like, I think it might have been 20 minutes or something like that, just a little, I think they turned... Leinster turned the ball over, and Adam Byrne made a breach. Mm. Played Jimmy O'Brien, got back in. They got 3 points. That was the first time they really got into the game, and it was just the story was just Glasgow just little micro plays that were getting them in behind. You know, they were playing expansively, but just not really clinical, and they just sort of left Leinster live in the game, and then Leinster just got back into the mix. And the second half was just all Leinster. It was like Glasgow looked terrible in the second half. Mm. And I was half wondering, is this a case of... Because, you know, when Rennie is leaving to go to Australia, they're in a shit position in the league. They needed to win that game desperately. And I thought that they would win because I thought they are desperate here. But I don't know. But maybe the fact that if you've the coach leaving and the players are, you know... They should have won that game, and they didn't. Now, credit to Leinster, man. They are unbeaten this season. They were awesome, and I thought I thought their D again. Leinster's D was just so good. They're so disciplined that at the end of the game, Glasgow were looking to just get a bonus, a losing bonus point. And I'd say there was 21 phases.
Yeah,
inside
Turkey, I think I was something like 29.
Was it? It was crazy.
I heard 40.
Definitely a round number there, right?
They didn't give a penalty for offside. They were so disciplined, man. Like, to defend inside your 22 for 240 phases.
Will Connors, smashing boys, wouldn't they?
They've got such a conveyor belt of players coming
sickening.
Through.
Sickening, I hate them.
It's so fucking annoying. And
so, see what you're saying there about Leinster growing into the game. They just hung tough, didn't they?
Mm.
And then they got two chances, scored two tries before half time, and then the game just changed.
Mm.
Is that the way? Like, you don't need to be dominant, or if you're going to be dominant, you have to be clinical. Because Conor O'Brien, he's the 12.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Brown's the 13, isn't he?
Yeah.
He was. I thought he looked very much like Henshaw. I thought he looked like he's in the mold of Henshaw.
Strong boy.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Strong boy.
Big
strong. He's a strong boy.
Fine young man.
Fine specimen.
Keen Keller coming back from Connacht and finishing getting two tries before the end of the first half.
Lovely, lovely fine defined goatee beard as well.
Fine young boy.
Yeah, they were good. Leinster were really good.
I know. I'm sick.
Why don't we just talk about Leinster and say how amazing they are? Because they fucking are. They're quality, man.
Yeah. I think Glasgow were a little bit rudderless. down a little peg or two. I don't know. Yeah, you could be right about that. When your coach is leaving, there could be something. And I think Stuart Hogg did give them some sort of, I don't know, from the back, a little bit more confidence or something. I felt him missing might have left a little bit of a hole there. But
they needed to, like, losing someone like Stuart Hogg, who's the best player Scotland have by a country mile. I don't know. There needs to be some sort of counterbalance to that. Like, I don't, like, Rory Jackson with a pink mustache and that mullet. Like, as good as he is, he's not going to be anywhere near Stuart Hogg's level. So they needed to, like, almost like as a statement of ambition. The same you have Bundiaki signing, like, their marquee player for Connacht signs for them on a 3-year deal. That's a statement of intent from Connacht. When Stuart Hogg is leaving the Warriors, and then their head coach is leaving, you're like, if I was there, I'd be like, well, come on, we need to make a big signing, or we need to show that we're serious about winning. And the way they played at the weekend looked a little bit to me like as if they're a bit in disarray, which is because as much as I despised them when I coached against them, because they were such a hard unit, and I felt like they were so competitive, and they had a real edge to them the way they played, and they played really nice rugby. I would like to see them. You know, Tommy made the point that it's not great for the Pro 14 that Leinster can send out their second string and beat Glasgow's first team and that Edinburgh send their first string to Munster, and Munster put out their second string, and the games are Leinster win, Munster lose by 2 points. Mm. It's not good for the league, but it's just that Irish rugby is in a good place.
Yeah.
With what's coming through, and then speaking of in a good place, Sprout again.
Yeah, man of the match.
Yeah. He was really good, man.
He was.
We've been brilliant for his career, haven't we?
Yeah. I'm not sure how influential this podcast is, or this show is, that it goes out that we influenced that. But he's, I thought the Kings weren't up to much.
Yeah.
But I thought Conor Fitzgerald and Caelan Blade again, decent, really good player. I think that they're really well stocked now.
Yeah.
In terms of having Blade and Marmion. I think some of the other clubs would be looking at going. Ooh.
Yeah, I mean, you could. like you, as you said, Aki signing. They were slow to get out of the blocks as well. I think on Saturday night, and the first 20 minutes they're a bit sloppy still. And then Aki scores a maul try, which kind of shows the variation or the variety that he brings to his game and how lucky they are to have him signed for another 3 years. And
that was always a weakness in this game, I thought.
Mauling.
It's mauling.
Do you know what it is, man? Him signing, the key thing there is when Connacht won the Pro 14 a few years ago, I don't think they had any centrally contracted players. And the following year, after winning the league, I don't think they had any centrally contracted players. So if you think of it, Connacht have a budget that's assigned to them from the union. When you win the league, now, any of the players whose contracts are, players are going like, well, we won the league, you got to pay us more money. Or when they're on their way to winning the league, they're like, well, look, we're top here, we're going really well. You know, a couple of the lads with it, like Ulton Delan, Matt Healy, Adia Loken, Beelum, obviously Henshaw, Marmion, would have all been involved with Ireland. So they would have got capped there. So then they're like, well, Connacht now have to pay those players more to retain them, or else someone like Henshaw leaves.
Yeah.
And then the following season, what have they actually gotten for winning the league? They just have a much bigger wage bill now.
All you've done is just advertise how good some of your players are.
Yeah, yeah. And now you have to try and retain them. So it's great to see because Connacht wouldn't be able to compete with the likes of the French teams that are coming in that want to sign Bundiaki. You know, so for the union to come in and say, we're going to support you here and we're going to lock down this guy as a marquee player is really good. And it shows the union are supporting Connacht. Because otherwise, you're like, if he left...
They're just starting from scratch again every year.
And
I hope they go out and they put out a good team next weekend against Gloucester. Back to back, they're away first game, right? Last year against Sale, they put out a weaker side over there. And still could have won the game. I hope they've got a lot of players coming back. Jared Butler came off the bench the other night again. I imagine they'll start Carty, they'll start Farrell.
Fanga's on fire at the minute.
Yeah, Fanga's been really good. Defensively there was a few things they need to get tighter at. There were like the Kings are by and large just going to be just really really direct, really really physical. Because they're the poorest resourced team in the Pro 14. Like, you have to admire how, like, all of their players are hard. Do you know what I mean? They are tough, physical players. But they shouldn't beat you, you know what I mean? They shouldn't beat you with magic plays. You know what's coming and you just got to stop them. And that was what this was disappointing, is that the couple of tries that they got in the first half, the Kings were just pretty much basic. You know, just runners, boom, and they scored. So... But I thought like they mauled well. Jimmy Duffy, the forwards coach, doing a good job there, and bringing Bundiaki in. If you watch most of the maul tries these days that come in, you'll see the backs joining. You watch Saracens, they always have their backs joining. So Bundiaki joined on the two. He scored on the first one. The second one, he joined at the back. And when the head of the maul got turned, he was at the front of it fighting. Like, you know, it's not that he's just not just a guy just trying to get on the ball as a rudder at the back of the maul and score. He was actually fighting at the front of the maul, knocking forwards out of the way.
Have you spent any time in any mauls?
We used to do one where we'd set one up in the middle of the pitch.
Back pitch.
Back pitch. Yeah. Kidney had, he loved it. It worked every time, where Trevor Hazelton would just stand and shove his arse into whoever it was, and then I'd have to go in and kind of lock on beside him and probably step on his toe and just look really awkward, and set up a maul off a line out in the middle of the pitch. And I think we scored a couple of really important tries
Did they do it against Gloucester?
In the miracle match, and then we did it against Cardiff. I think Quinny scored in another. It might have been 2008 or something like that. But I wouldn't be comfortable in them all.
Yeah, I've been uncomfortable in them. Yeah. I joined them all when Rory was on the ball, and then I went. They started to get fussy about that, didn't they? You had to go on and then kind of gradually make your way forward. And then I was like, right, I'm in this mall. And I go pumping my legs as hard as I could. And then you just end up, it doesn't work. For some reason, it didn't work. And then Rory kind of took me aside afterwards and he was like, you can't just go in there 100 miles an hour. You can't have to feel it.
Feel it where the pressure is going. And then you're trying to work either with it or around it. Like if there's so much pressure coming this way, then you might have to try and just quickly get around it.
Yeah.
If there's not that much pressure here, you might try and just like hold your feet a little bit to allow the pressure to go past and then pivot and go back around.
That's what I didn't hold. I fell over, actually, now I think about it. I fell over. And then we did a 10-man, 11-man line-out, whatever it was, against R4 for Ireland. John Plumtree was sorting that out. Remember Plumtree? Mm. And his whole thing was the wingers were either end, and then whatever way the line-out went, Plumtree was giving us the direction before, and he was like, so we waste you. We had to basically just throw ourselves to like protect them for a second to get it set up. So just get trampled. We never actually got to do it in training. Just got trampled by the dirties. Anyway.
Yeah. There was a couple of Pro 14 player career landmarks made at the weekend. Stephen Archer reached 200 caps for Munster. He's there a long time. There was someone at Ulster that had
Louis Lulick, 100.
100 caps.
Led the team out.
Yeah.
And actually was on the pitch for quite a while.
Yeah.
Before anybody else joined.
Was he?
Yeah, yeah. Uncomfortably so.
Oh, great.
He stressed his hamstrings for about 5 minutes. You keep yourself busy.
Yeah. It got me, us talking about players that have reached, you know, those high numbers of caps and maybe haven't gotten the recognition. Pat was talking about it beforehand and asked the question, who would we have in mind for players that we played with that didn't probably get the recognition but put in a serious shift for the club? Anyone pop to mind for you?
I have a very good team here. Is this our black and white, is it?
We can do the black and white now.
Let's put it in the black and white. I've got one. Have you got a team?
I might be able to take 5 just to finish it.
Okay, so this is the black and white section. So
okay.
So black and white is we got to pick an underrated team so they can be just players that maybe we just feel never got the recognition, but you always rated them when you played against them, with or against them.
Can they be like AIL players as well as anyone?
Okay.
Yeah.
Who wants to kick it off?
Well, give me 2 minutes to finish my list there.
Would you want me to?
We'll take a quick break, lads. Yeah. We'll be back.
It's just your typical underdog. You're saying like how they ripped. I was thinking Last of the Mohegans style.
I was thinking like Indiana Jones as well, like where your man tries to rip. I don't know why.
That's graphic for Indiana Jones. Oh yeah.
He rips the hearts.
Cover the heart.
Classic.
Indy.
He didn't. Connacht didn't cover their hearts.
No, they didn't. They should have covered their hearts.
Yeah.
Should have listened to the advice of Short Rod.
It's Short Rod, is it?
Yeah.
Connacht didn't have a Short Rod.
No.
That was it. They had no one to say to cover their hearts.
No, Andy Friend should have been on the radio. What? Short Rod-esque.
All right, welcome back. And it's time to play Black and White. One juicy topic and a big debate. This week we're going to have the three of us give our starting 15 of players that we played with or against throughout our rugby careers. And these are the players that did not get the recognition that they deserved. Correct?
Correct.
Okay. This is very interesting.
The players that we felt were really, really good players, but maybe other people wouldn't. The public might have been aware of them.
All righty. For a variety of different reasons, I think. I don't mind. I can go if you want.
Far away.
Yep. Okay, I've gone with Freddy Pucciarello. Good, solid prop. Very wider than he is tall.
Yeah. He's a rectangle.
Yeah. And low percent body fat. hard to move. And very, very funny.
Low body fat, but looked fat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was actually, because he was just sort of an odd shape.
Yeah, I remember you saying once that, like, if there was a burning building and Jerry needed to jump out of the burning building, he'd look out and he'd go, "Hey, you, just stay there," thinking he's a really fat person that he'd be able to jump down on and that would be quite cushiony. And then he'd jump out the window and jump down and realise that Fetty, even though he looks like he'd be quite cushiony, he was actually quite hard.
Mm.
He'd end up hurting himself. Just perfect analogy.
I think at the time it was funnier when he was there and he was like looked fatter. Yeah, catch me, Fatty.
I've gone with Dennis Foggs at hooker. Great player, great person to have around the squad. And
you've gone for crack mostly.
Yeah, because I'm useless with front row, so I'll go with crack. Simon Best, who was the first roommate I ever had in Irish camp, and who was very sound, and I presume he's a good prop as well.
Probably good crack, isn't he?
Lovely fella. I've gone with Justin O'Connell in the second row. He was he's Paulie's older brother. Captained me playing with Bows before I played for Munster. And just hard as nails. Probably one of the reasons why O'Connell is O'Connell is because of him. Good, solid older brother. Mick O'Driscoll, partnering him in the second row. Mick O obviously put in years and years of effort. I think he played to Munster until he was in his mid to late 50s.
Me and Tommy started a rumour in Ireland camp that we walked in on him having phone sex with his missus.
Unless that's not true.
Well, what are you wearing?
That's good. I've gone with a back row of Barry O'Mahony.
Great call.
I've thrown him in six because I want Niall Ronan at seven. Niler and Baz, two of the most skillful players I ever played with, and also great crack. I've gone with Xavier Rush at number eight.
Great show.
He was such a bollocks to play against.
Ulster signed him, and then he pulled out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that.
We got Pedri instead, Pedri Vandenberg instead.
Oh, bum deal.
Xavier Rush. Pedri.
Sorry, yeah. I don't know who you are, but Xavier Rush was just very difficult to play against. Just relentless playing with Cardiff. He was kind of their stalwart for years.
Any crack?
I don't know. Never chatted to him. I've gone with nine, Fiacco Lachlan, who played Irish 21s with me. He's now a Munster development officer. He works at the academy. Ridiculous player underage. Probably the best player, like one of those guys that you think is going to be guaranteed play for Ireland, and for one reason or another didn't. Barry Keeshan at number 10, who played 10 for Dolphin for years, also. And also
serious bootman, isn't he?
Yeah. Anytime, like when JJ was kicking that ball last week in Thomond Park, I just think back to any Munster 21s days or underage playing with Barry Keeshan. It was like, you'd close your eyes and be like, please kick this, and he would always fucking kick it. One of those freaks. I've gone with Dowling on the wing. We always know how important Dowling was to our Munster squad, and quite an incredible professional.
Gone for crack as well?
Yeah, nah.
No.
Solid.
There's a difference between crack and just like playing like...
And very good teammate. Very good, very reliable. Keith Matthews, 12 for Connacht, and played with him with Bows and Munster on the way up. Very solid guy. Like, had my back as a partnership. 13 have gone with Regan King.
Great call.
Did he get capped for the All Blacks?
Yeah, I think he did. I think he got one.
If he was an Irish 13, he would maybe not, because the risk was there. But he'd have played 12. They'd have played him anywhere. Just get him on the field.
He played with his son at Scarlett's there.
That's right.
A couple years ago. That right?
What's his son like?
I don't know.
One
crack. He made the crack 15.
One cap, one try for the All Blacks. Yeah. What a player, man. Every time I play against him, I'm like, oh, fuck, this guy is a magician.
What about when we were playing with Munster years ago and we were so stuck for backs that Declan Kinney started playing the forwards and the backs. He put David Wallace on the wing and he put Leamy at centre.
And
we played Scarlets and Regan King was just running at Leamy and just holding the ball and spinning it in his finger. Leamy was like, oh, I get the ball there and jump. And he's like, oh, Regan King's made another fucking line break. And they were like, oh, they're going to play John Hayes at fullback next.
Picked him over me in the centre. Put me fullback. I was like, I've never played fullback in my life. And they're like, you're too small. Just stick you in the back. And they put Leamy in the centre. It was
a long day.
That is mental.
Yeah. Be there, Leamy, watch out for the spinny ball thing.
He's spinning the ball on his finger. I've gone on the wing, on the other wing, Malzieu.
Julian Malzieu.
Winger for Clermont.
Crack.
I've no idea, but the hardest human being on the planet to tackle.
Strange career. Came up, burst on the scene, was unbelievable for about a year and a half. Disappeared for 2-3 years, came back and was unbelievable again, yeah. And then disappeared for good.
Yeah.
Weird, well, weird career.
Yeah, so French. He looked so thin and tall that you'd be like, oh, he's not going to do much damage, or he's not going to do that. And then he'd hit you a slap of a hand off, and he just, you'd be gone 5 yards back. He was a freak. And I've gone with Ben Blair at 15. He was the fullback for Cardiff and was just very solid for them for a good 7 or 8 years. Know if he was ever capped for the All Blacks.
He was, yeah. Was he? That's a solid team. Regan King's very good. Give us your team.
Okay, I've gone for Tom Court at Loosehead. He's a lion. He was accused of getting that accolade just because he was on holidays. Australia at the time. great fella.
Is it like a holiday package where you can like go on tour, yeah, and you can play, yeah, for the Lions and stuff like that?
He played a premium. I think if you fly business class, then you get put into the draw for the Lions. Okay. For me, Rob Herring at hooker, because he's been in Rory's shadow for a while, and I think we're going to see the best of him this year. Peter Bracken. At tight head. Peter Bracken,
the scrum doctor.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember we were playing. Not very coordinated. This won't. this won't be the reason why he's in my team.
Okay.
We were playing one touch, like football one touch, and he tried to like touch it here, and whatever way he did it, he like crossed over his legs and just collapsed.
he was playing for Connacht one day. We played one of those, the festive derbies. And we went up to play Connacht, like, was it 2006 or something like that? And Brax had played for Munster. So we were trying to get into him. I think Quinny was kind of mouthing at him a bit like that. And there was a bit of a fight. And everyone just started, ah! And everyone just, there was about six of us pushing Brax from different angles. Like, I'd push him, he'd turn around to me, and I'd kind of move around. Someone would go, oh, shut up, Brax, fuck you, fuck you. And next to me, he just went, and we all came in,
backed off.
He's a bit of a character. His younger brother, Eamon Bracken, did you ever come across him?
No.
Played 21s with him, and they set up this episode of MTV Cribs at the Marion Hotel in Dublin. Someone knocked on his door and he goes, ah, MTV, I wasn't expecting you till tomorrow. Got into character. Second row, we've got Al O'Connor. I think he's underrated. At five, I've got Matt Mustian. Do you remember this guy?
Mm.
Yeah. Was class for Ulster, then moved to Edinburgh and then started turning off for Edinburgh.
Matt? Who?
Matt Mustian, I think his name was. We called him Chops. I think it was Matt Mustian.
Matt Mustian winger who played for an Aussie winger who played for Ireland years ago.
That's who I'm definitely thinking of.
Yeah, Matt Mustian. Anyway, honourable mention for the, what do you call the second row in Connacht that played really well the year they won the league and then went to Grenoble?
Ali McDowney.
He could potentially get
very, very good footballer.
Yeah. Six, I've got Chris Henry. Very underrated. Honourable mention for Niall Ronan. Sorry, he's at seven. Willie Falloon.
Oh, yes, yes.
Good player.
Yeah, he's hard, man.
Tough, really tough. Just a little bit small, I think. Who have I got at eight? What does that say? Shane Jennings. Playing out of position, yes. But underrated.
Yeah.
I've got Duncan Williams at nine because I played schools with Duncan Williams and everybody, he was a year young and everybody was talking about Duncan Williams, how class he was going to be, he was going to be the next best thing. And then he just kind of got injured and he actually only kind of came through really towards the end of his career. Mm. Anyway. Johnny McPhillips just got chopped from Ulster last year, but very good 10.
Is he gone?
Yeah, he got, well, I don't know if he got chopped or he's at Leicester now.
Oh, really?
But he could do well. He could do very well. Mm. For a couple of reasons, my both of my wings are Alad Brew and Nathan Brew, only because I don't know which one's which. So I put both of them in. Honourable mention for Fionn Carr.
who was ridiculous for Connacht for a few years, a wee period of time. Paddy Wallace at 12, not because he's underrated, but just because he's so, so talented. I remember we were out one night and we were slagging Paddy, saying, "You could not have got fewer caps if you tried." He's so talented. But anyway, Nick DeLuca, do you remember him, the Edinburgh centre?
Yeah.
He used to tear it up, he used to torment Ulster. Nick DeLuca, he just sticks with me as a guy in the Pro 12, it was back then, who just kind of never really kicked on, but he was class for Edinburgh. Honourable mention for Ian Whitten, who you mentioned earlier. This is a weird one as well, you probably won't remember this guy. Williams, the 15 for Treviso.
I do remember him. Yeah, the Aussie.
Yeah, Aussie. Ridiculously good feet.
Yeah, he was in, they played Munster, he played... Benetton Treviso were playing Munster in the European Cup. I think he was on the piss in town the night before, and then he got like, I think he potentially got man of the match in the European Cup the next day. He was unreal.
So you're saying he was on the, I think he was on the piss quite a bit to the point where they would select him, and then if he happened to be about, he would play.
Man, he was, yeah, he was just,
get him in the team.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Someone Brandon Williams. What was it?
Brendan Williams.
Brendan Williams.
Brendan, yeah. His feet, man. His ridiculous. Stepper. He was a brilliant player.
Brilliant player. Anyway, that's my 15.
That's nice. Mm-hmm. Well, I've gone with ones.
Nice.
Mine is going to be a little bit more guys that I played with, and I struggled, like Marcus Horn. Everyone knows him. The guy got 70 caps, so you're like, he's not really.
But you're
underrated.
Right, though. You're right.
Yeah.
I don't think. Anyway, just your team.
So I went with Les Hogan, who played with Shannon and Munchens, as Lou said. My hooker was David Blaney. I don't know if you know him. The Blaneys all played with Terran Ure, and he was my age group when I played, like in schools rugby, and he was phenomenal. Really, like, quite thin, you know, quite thin for a hooker. But was just a really, really good footballer. All the Blaneys were outrageously good rugby players. Just like...
And good at cards.
Very good at cards.
Good at poker and rugby.
Tight head, Simon Best. I thought he was a really good player. And I think the only reason he's underrated is probably because his career ended so early that people didn't realise how good he was.
Because he had heart issues.
Yeah. Tom Hayes was one of my locks. He was a fucking brilliant player. Mick O'Driscoll at 5. Phone sex. Six was Shane Jennings. I thought he was really, really good player. Just I hated playing against him all the time because he was so consistent, and Niggly himself and Leo always hated playing against him because I knew they'd show up. You know, some of the Leinster lads, when you played them back in the old days before they became fucking animals, you'd be like, these guys won't show up. But Leo and Shane and Jeno always showed up. Niall Ronan at 7, incredibly skillful, brilliant player. At 8, I went with John O'Sullivan. Do you remember John O'Sullivan?
Yeah.
I picked him at 8. He played a lot of 6 when he was at Munster and 7 when he was at Munster. But when I played with Connacht, he was phenomenal, man. Mm. He was like such, he was so
such
hard.
An athlete, yeah.
9 is... Chris Keane, he's got a head like a melted welly, but and he can't really pass the ball either, so controversial, but very good at a pick and go.
For a scrum half.
Yeah, loved pick and go. Very, very ugly. 10, Jeremy Staunton.
Spiky. Oh,
yeah, he was like, he was the ninja, man. Ninja. When I was, there was a year that I played under 20s rugby, and Jeremy was playing... had come out, was captain of the Irish club team, was playing for the Irish 21s team, playing for the Irish A team and the Irish senior team in the 1 year. In the one season, he just went all the way up through the teams. I'm telling you, it was unbelievable. He was one of the most talented players I've ever come across. On my left wing, I'm going to go Ted Robinson, this guy I played with in Connacht. The most dedicated warrior you could ever play with, man. He was an animal. Dave Quinlan from Blackrock, played with Leinster, played with Northampton at 12. Just boom, just so physical. Baz, you made it at 13. Ian Dowling.
Why?
You made it. I just think that you were one of the best 13s I played with. I feel like you did not realise your potential in your career whatsoever. I'm not having a go at you, I'm just saying.
No, for
That 2006 year when you came into the Munster team, when Mike Mullins tore his Achilles tendon, you were just ripping teams apart. I mean, we played Leinster on New Year's Eve and we lost, but you were marking Dricko, and you, I remember, like, there was one stage you were turning him inside out, but you kind of didn't back yourself to just carry. But I thought you were a phenomenal player.
So you should take that advice on board with that career that ended 15 years ago.
Yeah, thanks for telling me it's now.
Dowling on the right wing, just unbelievably consistent, brilliant trainer, just a brilliant guy to have in a squad. And then 15 was Cormac Dowling, who I played with the Irish schools, and he had to retire. He didn't get to play professional rugby properly. He did his ACL a couple of times, but he was incredible, incredible.
Who gets the pint of Guinness for that? Rugby just gets the pint of Guinness.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we just give you all one and just throw Flav's name up on the board and...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, his name isn't even on the board.
Flav gets his first pint of Guinness.
Pint of Guinness.
And we'll get the chalk out and get him on the board.
Okay. My team is obscure, but I'm happy with it.
Great, great. Very, okay. Very enjoyable. Thank you. Okay, a huge thank you to everybody for listening, and to those of you on YouTube, thanks for watching. Cheers to everyone that was involved in organising the show this week, to Pat, to Anthony, to Paul and to Fiona. This has been Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. Party on.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.